From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. The Friday deadline for the June primary has come and passed. A crowded field of Democrats have filed for re-election for governor, collectively going against pressure from the state party to thin the candidate herd as the risk of a GOP lockout looms. Eight Democratic candidates will be moving forward to the primary and two leading Republicans, making a wide open contest with at least 10 candidates to succeed Governor Gavin Newsom. And a reminder, California is a top two primary, meaning the top two vote getters advance to the general election regardless of party. The pool is spread so thin that recent polling has Republican Steve Hilton in the lead and Chad Bianco also giving Democrats a run for their money. But this isn't the only race that is hard to predict with just 3 months to the primary. With voter-approved redistricting last year to favor Democrats, congressional candidates have had to pivot to improve their chances, including Representative Kevin Kiley, who's now running without a party preference in District 6, which includes parts of Sacramento and Placer counties. Dustin Gardner is the co-author of Politico's California Playbook and joins us with the latest. Welcome, Dustin.
Hey, Vicky. Good to be here. Plenty to talk about.
Yeah, plenty to talk about. I mean, there's never really a dull minute. How unusual is the California governor's race?
It's so unusual to have eight major Democratic contenders at this point. And I say major as folks that are relatively well-known. They've held an office before, or they're, you know, someone who's significantly wealthy or, you know, well-known. And when you look back historically at past governor's races, you know, for example, when Jerry Brown won the governorship his second time around, or when Newsom won the governorship in 2019 or 2018. In both of those cases, it was clear at this point, you know, with just a few months before the June primary, that Jerry Brown and Newsom were the standard bearers, the front runners for their party. And to be in this position where there is no clear Democrat in that lane is just historically an anomaly.
Yeah, I mean, there were calls from California Democratic Party Chair Rusty Hicks for lower polling candidates to look at the viability of their campaigns and pull out of the race just for the betterment of the party. Planned Parenthood backed this, as well as county party chairs as well, applying that pressure. But it didn't seem to really land with candidates. Only former state lawmaker Ian Calderon dropped out. So given that you've been following this evolution so closely, why do you think the vast majority of candidates, the eight Democratic candidates, are choosing to stick it out?
You know, I will say that push from Rusty Hicks and from the county party chairs, which included, you know, county party chairs in more than two dozen counties, including the chairs in the power centers of Los Angeles and San Francisco. So there was some heft behind that. But it came at the last possible minute. I mean, the county party chairs put their letter out on Thursday, I believe, and the filing deadline was Friday, and most of the candidates for governor had already, you know, made their decision and filed earlier in the week. Rusty Hicks came out early last week, and, you know, several candidates filed on the same day he made his announcement or the next day. And so I think a lot of folks I'm talking to in Sacramento, party leaders in other parts of the state as well, including San Francisco, are wondering, why did party leadership, the gatekeepers of the Democratic Party in California, wait so long to do this? I mean, you know, we're less than 3 months out from the June primary. Why ballots, you know, will be hitting mailboxes in the middle of May? Why were party leaders not pushing on this sooner? And, you know, the state party just had its convention in San Francisco. And at the time of that convention, Rusty Hicks, as party chair, was really kind of brushing off questions about whether this was a concern, you know, whether it could lead to a lockout of two Republicans advancing from the top two June primary. And he downplayed them then. And then, just 2 weeks later, that he made this last minute push to try to convince people to get out. And I think there had been some behind the scenes efforts to get Democrats out. But, you know, some of the lower polling folks, and those didn't seem to work. And, you know, and I think the fact that they waited was so late to make this effort was a factor that in terms of the candidates not being convinced. And then also, you know, some of the candidates that are polling lower in that 1-3% range, the folks that were part of the target of this effort, some of them, you know, really took offense to this push. You know, you had Superintendent of Public Instruction Tony Thurman saying that, you know, it felt like, you know, the candidates of color were the ones that were getting targeted with this. You have, you know, three front runners in Tom Steyer, Katie Porter, Eric Swalwell, that, you know, are all white people, and the, you know, the candidates of color have tended to pull lower in recent months. And I, you know, I think that that also complicated the push within the party and led some of those candidates to really, yeah, really take offense. Mm-hmm.
So how are Republican candidates like Steve Hilton and Chad Bianco, are they capitalizing on this Dem indecision?
Yeah, I mean, this chaos within the Democratic side of the governor race primary, it really has helped the Republicans consolidate their base. You know, Bianco and Hilton have been polling consistently at the top of the field. Hilton more recently seems to have edged Bianco out and, you know, be more in the number one spot. But often Hilton is in that number one, in that number two spot. And yeah, I mean, I think that the lack of, incoming from Democrats has helped them really kind of focus on attacking each other and consolidating their party base. And I will say that Hilton and Bianco have increasingly been trading barbs between themselves as they try to solidify their position as the number one Republican going into the primary. There's been a lot more sort of jabs between the two of them in recent weeks. Hilton has highlighted a moment during the pandemic when Chad Bianco knelt with Black Lives Matters protesters during a protest in Riverside County. That seems to have hurt Bianco among some of the Republican base, and Bianco in turn has been targeting Hilton, saying that he's, you know, a lifelong political consultant and someone that doesn't have the same leadership experience. So no shortage of infighting over there as well.
Yeah, I mean, we just got 12 weeks to the primary. I mean, that's not a lot of time. So what needs to happen now with the Democratic candidates? I mean, do they need to be more aggressive and take each other on, like politically cannibalize each other? Because, yeah, 12 weeks is going to be here before we know it.
Increasingly, we are seeing the Democrats starting to throw jabs, especially among that pack of front runners. Tom Steyer recently took some pretty big swings at Eric Swalwell, raising questions about his residency, suggesting, you know, that he's not a full-time resident in the East Bay, his congressional district in the East Bay, and saying that he actually lives in Washington, D.C. Swalwell pushed back hard against that, saying that he's, you know, been a renter in the East Bay for a long time. But that speaks to the amount of infighting among that top group of Republicans. And those two, along with Katie Porter, have been, you know, statistically tied in quite a few of the recent polls, or with, you know, within a couple of percentage points. So there does seem to be a sense of desperation as one person tries to emerge as the front runner. I think increasingly you will see that infighting among Democrats, and the effort from party leaders and the outside to get some folks to drop off, even though, you know, the filing deadline is passed and all of these eight major Democrats will appear on the ballot. They could still suspend their campaigns and, you know, endorse someone else, or, you know, help kind of narrow voter attention onto the front runners if they decide to pull back. And so I think that effort will continue, and you'll see more prominent Democrats wading in and encouraging some of the folks at the back of the pack to step back.
That's an important point to mention, because that can create voter confusion. I mean, if a candidate suspends, you know, their campaign, their name will still be on the ballot come June.
That's exactly right. And I think that's why so many folks were frustrated about this. You know, you had labor leaders and, you know, party organizers, county party chairs, we're really working the phones last week trying to convince people to drop out. And one of the arguments I heard from those groups of party leaders was this idea that even if someone suspends their campaign later, just merely being on the ballot, you know, if you're someone who's held statewide office before, like, say, Tony Thurmond or the superintendent or former state controller Betty Yee, just having their names on the ballot and you know, their titles could easily draw 1% of the vote, which adds to the complicated math for Democrats as they face that worrisome scenario for the party, that, you know, maybe two Republicans advance from the primary. That's an unlikely scenario, but increasingly, if you have eight Democrats, you know, there are forecasts that suggest it could be roughly a 1 in 4 chance of that happening if something doesn't change.
Well, as far as the outgoing governor is concerned, Newsom has not endorsed a candidate. He didn't go to the state Democratic Party convention either. He's currently on a book tour promoting his memoir. But last week, when asked about the gubernatorial race, you know, he had said something to the effect of, when I'm out in the community, people aren't talking to me about it. Do you think the average voter is tapped into the governor's race at this point?
I think what Newsom is highlighting is this concern that this race is just not drawing a lot of attention. When Newsom ran for governor, when Jerry Brown ran, there was just this level of electricity and attention around the governor's race in those years. And now this year, it just really has not been the, you know, top of mind for a lot of voters. And there's many reasons for that. I mean, you have so much attention around President Trump and now, you know, the war in the Middle East and, you know, and Governor Newsom is also preparing for his own future and likely presidential run. There's a lot of things competing for attention and airtime. But I think that's a lot of what party leadership is concerned about, that they don't have this, you know, if this isn't seen as a top of the ticket, exciting race, that a lack of Democratic enthusiasm could even complicate, you know, further complicate these fears about some sort of unusual scenario in the June primary.
You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Dustin Gardner, co-author of Politico's California Playbook, about the June primary. Friday was the deadline for candidates to file. Well, let's move to congressional races. So voter-approved Prop 50 changed the trajectory of campaigns, especially in swing districts. Starting in our area with Kevin Kiley, the Republican waited until the 11th hour to select a district. He landed on District 6, no longer running as a Republican, but as no party preference. And he held, you know, his I guess, regular morning press call this morning. He had said that he will be the sole independent member of the House of Representatives if elected. What's behind this strategy?
Gerrymandering in this, the Democratic drawn map, it created a world of headaches for Kevin Kiley. And, you know, he really didn't have many options. He considered many, many different districts, as we know, and then ultimately landed on going in this, in the sixth district, which is most similar to his current district. And Kevin Kiley, it's an unusual evolution because he had been one of the most conservative members of the legislature when he was, you know, still at the state capitol in Sacramento. And then we've seen him evolve over the last year and a half or so, especially as these national redistricting wars heated up. He saw that his district was going to be on the chopping block and became increasingly critical of Republican leadership for their role in national redistricting wars, including, you know, the Republican supported map in Texas that California was seeking to counter with its own map. So I think, you know, Kevin Kiley has argued, his explanation was basically that both parties are complicit in what he called the plague of gerrymandering. And he's saying that his going no party preference is really a way to go outside get around that national redistricting problem. But, you know, there isn't a long history of success for independent candidates, especially in the House of Representatives. So I think Kevin Kiley has a tough road ahead of him, and his relationship with the National Republican Party seems to have been strained by some of his criticism of redistricting in other states, and, you know, just willingness to break ranks with Republican leadership in the House and President Trump on some of these things. And so I think even though the NRCC, the National Republican Congressional Campaigning arm, has, you know, said nice things about Kiley in recent days, and they'll likely support him, I'm not sure how much support that really means in terms of fundraising money and other resources. So it'll be a tough road for him. I think this, you know, that speaks to the fact that the way this district was redrawn heavily favors Democrats in a lot of ways. And it'll be interesting to see if how much voters, you know, believe this evolution of Kevin Kiley. Is he really, you know, no party preference voter after being one of the most conservative Republicans in the legislature? And, you know, and what does it really mean beyond his label on the ballot? He's already said that he'll caucus with Republicans in the House if reelected, and he's remains part of the Republican caucus in the House even now as he's filed as, you know, independent for the ballot. So yeah, I don't know. What does it really mean? I think that remains to be seen.
Dustin, as always, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Making Sense of the Whirlwind. Dustin Gardner is the co-author of Politico's California Playbook, discussing the June primary because Friday was the deadline for candidates to file. Up next, there's a new push to bring shipbuilding back to the United States, with the Delta and the East Bay setting themselves up as prime contenders. We'll look at an initiative to get the region designated as a maritime prosperity zone. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.